Infendo Radio is on now.
Welcome everyone to Infendo Radio, the best Nintendo podcast on the English-speaking internet. This is episode 328. I'm your host, Holly Felmuth, and joining me tonight we have Harrison Milfeld.
Howdy, everybody.
And Colin Crompton.
Hello.
All right, so tonight we have a very special episode for you. It's not going to be our usual at all. We're calling this the Super Guide episode because it is the episode that we kind of teased, I think, a few weeks ago, where we just want to kind of explain some Nintendo basics for our friends and family who aren't really Nintendo fans. Because, you know, it's a pretty big undertaking, this podcast, and we want them to support us if they can, and this will make it a little easier for them.
I do want to say, though, but for everybody who's very seasoned video game fan or, you know, hobbyist or gamer or Nintendo fan as well, you can do the same thing that you do with usual super guys that we sell in different Nintendo games. You could just choose to ignore it and skip to the end.
Yes, exactly. But I think you'll get some entertainment value out of it, no matter what, so please stick around if you would like. But to begin, I'm actually going to just make a quick announcement. Everyone needs to know about this contest that's going on Infendo, if you saw my post about the Wii U update that added folders to the home screen. You may or may not have followed the comment thread on that post, but some readers thought that I had a pretty boring set of names for my folders, and so we actually developed this contest to name my Wii U folders. So just so you know a little bit about this contest, there is actually a prize involved. It is a signed copy of Final Reverie. For those of you who have been longtime listeners, you'll probably remember Scott/Essel Pratt from the show and the site. And he actually has this debut novel, Final Reverie. And the grand prize for this contest is a signed copy of it. That actually brings me to another point. This is United States only, because shipping costs anywhere else would be... Yeah.
Pretty
expensive. It'd be kind of insane anywhere else. But the idea is basically just to send some clever names, and we're going to just decide on the best ones for my Wii U folders to name them. So send your ideas along with your name and your preferred email address to, or in an email at contact@infendo.com. Those are the rules there. If you have any questions, it's not ending, the contest that is, doesn't end till October 11th, so feel free to send in any questions or concerns that you have. All right, and with that out of the way, I think we will dive into our super special super guide episode.
It's super fun and possibly going to be super long.
Yeah.
Possibly. We'll see. I think most of these questions can be answered fairly shortly, so we'll see. But I've tried to collect as many questions from non-gamers as I can for our Super Guide episode for us to answer, so we'll just start with those. Okay, so Kelly asks a couple of questions. The first one is, what is Nintendo's biggest or most successful game or game franchise?
That's pretty easy off the top of the bat, which you would have to say is the anything with Mario in the title. Well, the Super Mario Brothers franchise, to be exact. But if you wanted to put another one that was near the top of that, it would have to be Pokemon. Which, of course, once that came to the States, outside of Japan, into Europe, and all across different territories, it just became this huge phenomenon. And I believe that was, like, maybe the closest thing I could think was as big as a phenomenon as Mario was in the 80s. And that's no slack to say that Legend of Zelda, I mean, knowing that if you had to name off its this company's top five selling franchises, it's like Zelda, Mario, Mario Kart. Well, I'm putting in Mario Kart and all things with Mario in the title, and that Mario, Zelda, Pokemon, and Donkey Kong, and Wow, I'm drawing a blank when I've heard the last one now, just because I'm trying to think what's sold more, but, you know, I would say Metroid,
Kirby?
But then...
I don't know.
Kirby, Metroid up there, so...
Well, my initial thought, like, without having any, like, official information on this, my initial thought was Pokemon, and I was fairly close, but actually, the top-selling video game franchise, period, is just anything with Mario in the title, so that includes the Super Mario games, which are basically the core Mario games, plus the Mario Sports games, Mario Kart, Mario Party, the Mario RPG series, and so obviously that, I mean, encompasses a whole lot of different types of games. The second best-selling franchise is, I got some information actually from Justin Riley on this, but the second top-selling franchise is just the Super Mario series on its own. So for those of you who don't really know the difference there, I mean, Mario obviously stars in so many games, it's insane, so many different types of games, but the core Mario games are the Super Mario games. Super Mario 3D World on the Wii U obviously is one of those. I think most people probably remember Super Mario World for the Super Nintendo, Super Mario 64 for the N64. So that... Here's the question. Do we count, because it does seem a little unfair almost to count, like, everything with Mario in the title...
Yeah.
...as a series by itself?
Well, I'd say as far as... Yes, Mario has different franchises to base itself on, but as far as a character, that is the best-selling, you know, figure in the company's history. I mean, if I had to say to branch out as far as series, yeah, Mario Kart is up there. You could say Mario Party, but then again, sales of that have been stagnant, it seems like, for years, so with each iteration coming out.
So, Colin, what do you think about that? Should everything with Mario in the title count as a series?
Let's say again, it as a separate series, I'm not sure. Because if you combine everything, then Mario is obviously the biggest thing Nintendo has, because he stars in so many titles, it's unbelievable. I'm not really sure. I mean, my first initial thought was, well, what is Nintendo's biggest, most successful game / franchise? My initial thought was Pokemon, because of the impact it's had, which in my mind has lasted much longer than what Mario had. I mean, I know Mario made a massive impact, but it seems like he was not quickly forgotten about, but whenever a game came out, they were like, yeah, he's back, and then forgot about it afterwards, whereas Pokemon's just been very consistent all the way through, you know.
It's still a phenomenon.
It is.
Like a pop culture phenomenon, especially in Japan, obviously, so.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, I don't really know where to take it. I mean, Nintendo's biggest franchise is Mario. I mean, everything within it sells. So, that's it.
Well, my easy answer for this is to say that Super Mario, just the core Super Mario games, are the best-selling Nintendo games. That's just kind of my thought on it, because when you just say, like, Mario as a character, you're talking about multiple series, and so I don't really like going that route. I like to have a specific series, and that would be Super Mario.
And
so,
obviously, not all the Mario games were developed by Nintendo, like the Mario Party games were originally done by Hudson. If it's Nintendo's, like, then the Super Mario series is, because that is what they developed for, rather than, like, the Mario Tennis, which was done by Camelot, Mario Golf, which was done by Camelot. Things like that shouldn't really count.
Yeah, I actually kind of agree with that.
So,
actually, there's another part of this question, basically. Kelly says, what is Nintendo's biggest or most successful game / game franchise? So we could actually talk about an individual game, too, which would probably be, Wii Sports? Isn't that, like, the best-selling game of all time, period?
Well, I would say up here. Well, according to, like, game sales on here, I know for the longest time we have to deal with a game that's not bundled with the system as well. I mean, but as far as, I think, unless one of the Grand Theft Auto titles surpassed it, but before Wii Sports, the best-selling game that was not bundled was Super Mario Bros. 3. I think it was, like, around at 20 million copies.
Whoa. Yep, and there's another set of sub-questions for you when it comes to this, is does it count if it's bundled? Which I kind of agree with Harrison here. I don't think it should count if it is a bundled game,
No,
because obviously
you buy the system.
Wii Sports sold like crazy because Wii's sold like crazy.
That's right.
So that's the reason behind that.
Well, you would also, yeah, because as far as when it comes to bundle titles, you mean, look at Tetris, for instance. That was bundled with the Game Boy, so. No, I'm looking it up right now, so just keep on talking.
Well, we can move on to Kelly's next question, which is, what does the word Nintendo mean? Slash, where did it come from? Okay, so I think for it was kind of common knowledge among Nintendo fans that Nintendo meant what? Oh,
It would leave
I
luck.
just lost it.
Oh, it
leave luck to heaven.
Leave luck to heaven.
That's right.
But Justin Riley again sent in a Kotaku article actually that basically explains that that may not be what it means. In fact, I think in the article it says that Hiroshi Yamauchi, who is the president of Nintendo, in years past, he actually passed away last year, I believe.
It was, yeah.
But he was the president of Nintendo who basically moved the company into making video games. He made a statement at some point that leave luck to heaven was just a plausible,
Yeah.
not like a set in stone meaning, just a plausible one. So it's actually likely because Nintendo actually started out as a card making company that Nintendo, I there's a whole bunch of a whole bunch of context behind this, but it may just mean something like the like sanctuary where playing cards can be made, basically, because gambling was illegal back when Nintendo started, and they wanted, I don't know, it's really tough to explain, but it kind of has something to do with gambling if you take the very, very literal meaning of Nintendo.
Yeah.
So the truth is, though, nobody really knows.
No, and I mean, and it comes down to, like, at the end of the day, I mean, does it ultimately matter that it has a meaning? Because what does Sony mean? You know, what does Sega mean? Sega is just ages backwards. So it's, you know, at the end of the day, it just doesn't mean it's just a name for a company. I know it has, like, roots in things gone by, but I think the modern day Nintendo, the name is just a name.
Yeah. Although, I mean, part of the question is where did it come from? That is something that we absolutely don't know because,
No.
and we'll get to this later on. Nintendo is over 125 years old right now, so, the motivation, the intentions behind the name are just long lost to us. It's a big mystery that we'll never know, just like many other things when it comes to Nintendo are.
Such as when nobody knows the exact release date of the original Super Mario Brothers.
True, true.
Nobody knows.
It was before release dates were a thing. If I remember this rightly, Sonic 2 was possibly one of the first games to have a proper release date, because it was Sonic Tuesday.
Yeah.
I think that's accurate.
Yeah, I read about that in Console Wars, actually. Good book, by the way.
I haven't read it yet, but I look forward to it.
It's like my fifth plug for that book in the podcast over the last few months. But yeah, that's a very excellent book. Harrison, did you find out what is like the best-selling Nintendo game out there? Individual game, that is?
Individual, it's very vague at the moment right now, and I'm just getting on here. Obviously, this is what work does to you right now when you have the notes and everything time to fix, but you don't have time to actually, read through and everything. But according to here, because we know Wikipedia doesn't lie, I guess. But across all platforms, again, Tetris is the best-selling game of all time with 143 million copies. This is up over every single platform. But as far as Nintendo's best-selling game that they had, and this includes bundled or not bundled, is Wii Sports. And the next before that, whatever, is Minecraft, Super Mario Brothers, Mario Kart Wii,
Mario Kart Wii, well, that was bundled with some Wii systems, wasn't it? But
Yeah.
at first it was a standalone game. So I guess Mario Kart Wii, that's the closest answer we've got so far. Wii Sports Resort is way up high on here. Okay. People
Yeah.
really wanted that Motion Plus
Oh yeah.
controller.
I'm looking.
Nintendogs. Oh, this is
Yeah.
so weird and unexpected. I don't know what I was expecting, but not this. Oh, I guess I was hoping to see Super Mario Bros. 3 on here somewhere.
Well, it technically is Mario Kart Wii.
Yeah.
There you go. As far as an individual game goes, that might just be the best-selling Nintendo game that wasn't bundled. Actually, it was bundled. Again, it's a little vague because it was bundled with the Wii with
yeah.
a certain.
A certain bundle pack you could buy.
And, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, it half counts, I suppose.
Yeah. So that's kind of a vague one, but we'll move on to the next question here. Chantel asks, what was the first game Nintendo made for their original system? Now, this has all sorts of depth as well. She probably means the NES,
yeah.
which to Americans is the original Nintendo.
Or the Famicom, as it was called in Japan.
Japan, yeah.
Yep. Technically, it was released in Japan first, of course, as the Famicom, short for Family Computer. There's a little fun fact for you.
That's right.
I think, actually, the Famicom in Japan released with only 3 games. I think one of them was a port of Donkey Kong, because that actually started out as an arcade game. So, it is kind of tough. Justin actually also sent a link to me for this as well. I think there were, like, what, 16 games bundled with, or not bundled, but 16 launch games for the NES in the United States.
18, I believe.
18?
18. And I do have the list here for that. Those games released here in the States were 10 Yard Fight, Baseball, Clue Clue Land, Donkey Kong Jr., Duck Hunt, Exciteball, Excitebike, Golf, Gyromite, Hogan's Alley, Ice Climber, Kung Fu Master, Mach Rider, Pinball, Stack Up, Super Mario Brothers, Tennis, Wild Gunman, and Wrecking Crew.
What a lineup.
Yep. Nobody remembers half or more of those games, unfortunately.
Exactly.
But yeah, I short answer for that, I'd go with Donkey Kong, because if you're talking about the Famicom, of the 3 games that were released for the Famicom, the Donkey Kong port was probably the most well-known. I don't even know what the other two were. So
was it bundled with Rob, the robot?
Rob doesn't count as a game, does he?
No, but
it counts as a peripheral. But
yeah.
No, but it did work with certain games.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the games it worked with. I can't remember what it's called. Oh, well. Move on.
Yeah, I'd just easy answer Donkey Kong. Just in case, I mean, obviously this is our Super Guide episode. For those of you listeners who don't know, Donkey Kong was an arcade game at first, and it was ported to the NES, of course. It was the first game starring Mario, although at the time he was just called Jumpman.
Yeah.
And it just had, like, Donkey Kong up at the top of just some scaffolding throwing barrels at you, so...
Right.
But for newcomers here who, again, this is our Super Guide / history of this, it's just the origin of Mario's name came from, at the time, Nintendo of America, which was based in New York at the time in the 80s, while they were trying to figure out names for the character from Donkey Kong Jumpman to have his own game series, they had realized that their landlord had Mario Segale had a very distinct look to him from the concept art, and thus the name stuck.
Yep. So Nintendo of America's landlord, back when they were trying to figure out a name for the character. Oh, that's kind of... it's common knowledge, obviously, but it's a nice little fun fact. All right, next question. And I'm going to actually combine the next two, in fact. Colin has an uncle, David, who asks, why Nintendo? Just plain and simple, why Nintendo? Also, Brenda asks, what's so appealing about playing Nintendo? I only associate it with Mario and Duck Hunt. There you go.
There it is.
If you only associate Nintendo with Mario and Duck Hunt, that's the exact reason why it's so appealing to play Nintendo, because there's so much more to it. But let's just go at this question from Colin's Uncle David. Why Nintendo? You can interpret that question any way you want.
Who wants to go first?
Colin, you should. It's your uncle.
Okay. Okay. Right, David, listen up.
Listen here.
Why Nintendo? Well, I'm just trying to have a word to somebody that you're about. Oh, okay.
It is kind of... It's a tougher question.
It's hard to find a starting point and then go on from there. So, okay. Generally, and this is my generalization, Nintendo games are a lot more fun. They're not as serious as other, console makers.
Right.
They're just... Yeah, they are fun personified in a medium that you stick inside a machine and play. So, that's personally why I play Nintendo, is because it's something I grew up with, and I always have a positive experience from playing a Nintendo game. Whereas, some other console makers would have a fairly negative experience. So, I don't really know what to say. It's
just magical. It's like, why does everyone like Disney?
Exactly.
It's just, there's this magic to Nintendo. I don't know how else to explain it either.
There is no way to experience it. Yeah, it is. It's just, why Nintendo? You just experience Nintendo. That's the way it is.
Yeah. You know, people watch movies for a certain reason. They read books for a certain reason. Video games are a completely unique medium. And that in and of itself, I find really appealing. Nintendo just has this way of designing games. The difference between games and movies is that games are, they have to be designed in a way that they're playable. And I love being immersed in these worlds that Nintendo creates because they design these games so well. They're so fun. It's just fun to be in these different worlds and to explore them. And I mean, Zelda for me is like the perfect example of just a game series where it just sucks you in because the design is so darn good.
That's right.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm like Colin. I just, other than that, I don't know how to explain it. Nintendo just has this magic about it. Plus, Nintendo games just tend to be really well-rounded. I mean, Nintendo soundtracks are really fantastic. I mean, I'm not one to play games that are technically good-looking, like graphics that are hyper-realistic. I don't like that. I like that Nintendo has like good art direction with their games, and they just have this fun, sometimes really unique atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, if I could personify Nintendo into one game, I would just say Wind Waker. It's got like the best art direction of any game that I've played, and it's just so fun and free, and you experience the world that you're in. So, yeah, I mean, that's just Nintendo. That's what it is.
Yep, Harrison.
Well,
let's see if you can't put this into words.
I actually can. To answer, you know, Colin's uncle, is that a lot of my first, well, the majority of my first memories of video games come from Nintendo-made games and Nintendo-made products, and my older brother was able to get me into video games because, you know, he was the first one to own an NES, and then he was able to, late birthday present when he was 8, I believe, got a Super Nintendo, and Super Nintendo was probably the point where it launched me out to liking video games a lot more. It wasn't until I got into junior high, like late grade school and junior high, where I started to read more about the industry. But the thing with Nintendo, I mean, and some may call this as just blind nostalgia, or just, you know, just the fact that I have stuck in the past when it comes to loving this company. And yet, as a journalist, struggling journalist, it's just, you shouldn't have a bias, whatever, to as a company in favor of their games. It's just, but over times, I've criticized them and, you know, loved and hate decisions they've made over the past, but it comes down to, you know, the memories that they gave me as a kid, and they still tend to make more memories for me whenever as I get older, and I it's that sense that makes me feel like a kid again, really. I mean, not so much as far as, you know, it's like the Pixar effect. It's like, it's movies that are meant for kids and both adults alike. That's what I kind of find Nintendo as well. It's meant for both kids and adults alike out there.
Yeah. See, it's quite interesting because my history of Nintendo is kind of the opposite. Okay, so growing up, I played an NES at an early age, but really I was more of a Sega kid growing up until in the N64 era, mainly because the Saturn was a terrible platform. And, my nostalgia for Nintendo doesn't go that far deep compared to some people, but I mean, once I started playing the N64, and, you know, you see, like, Super Mario 64, and it's there. That's how it hooks you, you know. You find out that, you know, Nintendo does craft these amazing worlds that no other company does. So, and they're still doing it to this day.
So some people, you watch movies because they immerse you, and we play games for the same reason.
That's right.
They immerse us in a completely different way because we have complete control over the whole thing. I just keep thinking of Zelda. Zelda is what's going through my mind as I'm talking about this because obviously Zelda is about like the world and the environments and yeah. And Nintendo, it's just really impressive to me how Nintendo has maintained that through all these years. They just, yeah. Zelda games are always good. I don't know if they'll ever stop being good. That'll be a strange day.
That time may come, but not anytime soon.
All right, we'll move on. So that's what's appealing about playing Nintendo Brenda, and that's why we play Nintendo. Colin's Uncle David. We'll move on to our next question from Errol. How much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could Nintendo?
Good question.
I'm trying to keep a straight face.
No, when you gave me the notes that I chuckled at in work, whatever, and my friend was like, "What are you laughing at?" Nothing. I'm just something stupid. Oh no, did not say this question stupid. Just I lied about it. But I'm
a sure. Woodchuck could chuck a lot of wood if it could Nintendo. That's for sure.
Oh yeah.
If Nintendo consoles were made of wood, so.
Oh yeah, that was kind of a satirical question. Yeah. Well, I don't know what you'd call that question. I actually asked a friend of mine, my coworker. I asked her for some questions because she doesn't know a whole lot about Nintendo, and she's like, "I can't think of any questions. I'll ask my son, who knows a lot more about Nintendo." And he sent that to her in a text, and I was like, I'm putting it in the show, whether he likes that or not. So there it is. Our next question, however, comes from Pat. How can you possibly spend so much time behind a screen for entertainment? For someone who has outdoor interests, how could Nintendo satisfy the need for entertainment?
Easy for me. Well, as this kind of, for now as an adult, it's different. But as a kid, yeah, it was one of those few other things for parents or even themselves to actually, occupy themselves. I mean, as a kid, I played outside, and had other extracurricular activities, but, when it was dark outside or nothing really, I was nothing doing on a weekend because as a kid growing up, I was quite the introvert. I mean, I didn't really go out that much. I didn't come out of my shell, per se, until my freshman year of high school, but I was still gaming then. It's just, it's a way to relax and rewind for me, but also, playing video games like that, whatever, or just getting a good game, it's nice to take my mind off the worries that I have going on in my life, but also worries that are going on in the world, just the dangers, horrors, and such. It's just, it's a good distraction, is what I could say, but also a good hobby.
It's kind of an individual basis type thing, because it's really easy to say why we play games. We just like games. That's just kind of it's part of us. We find entertainment from games. But for somebody who hates being in front of a TV or computer screen or whatever,
which we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Ironically.
Yeah.
How do you convince somebody like that? I've always had this saying, there's a video game for everyone. So for somebody who likes to be out in the outdoors, what kind of a game? For one thing, you probably have to have a handheld system, a rugged one. So in this case, I actually personally know Pat. I would actually say she might like really story-heavy games, and games that you can play for, 10, 15 minutes and be done for, that time. So I'd say, maybe for handheld games, Professor Layton or Phoenix Wright. Or their crossover game. There's a plug for that, too.
Best of both worlds.
But yeah, anybody else have any other thoughts? Actually, for somebody, she also kind of appreciates art. I would say there's plenty of games that are very artful and well-designed that you could probably get some entertainment value out of as well.
Hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I first read this question, I was looking at it and said, well, you could ask the same question to someone who watches a lot of films. Because it's exactly the same thing, except for we're interacting with our world, they're just observing it. So, it is on a person-to-person basis, and someone who has outdoor interests, the handheld is the perfect solution. But then, I think that there are other means of that can cater for that, but for Nintendo, if she likes art, then I would suggest the Art Academy games. I mean,
good point.
That seems very obvious, but it's I said, I mean, Nintendo does all forms of, entertainment. So you're right, there is a game for everyone. They just need to find it.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, and for someone who would rather just spend most of their time outside, most of their free time outside, that is, it might not be worth it to buy a whole dedicated video game system just so they could play one or two games on it. So, yeah. It's a tough one. It's a tough question to answer. We're not going to try to sell anybody who doesn't want to get a gaming system a gaming system. So it is a tough question. But my answer to that question is just there's a game for everybody. There's a game that I think anybody who you talk to, there's a video game for them somewhere. So that's kind of my final thought on that. But kind of on that same note, Justin Riley sent in a question. He says, my daughter is 4 and wants to play video games, but she struggles with controls and dies a lot. Can any of you suggest games that are good beginner games with very simplistic or minimalist controls where dying is hard or non-existent? Animal Crossing comes to mind, but I've never played Animal Crossing, so I'm not sure.
Mm.
Animal Crossing is a good one, I'll just say that.
That's
right
a very good, very good choice. Ideally, you want a game where if you die, you're not really penalised for it. It's just like, oh, okay, carry on. Which I would suggest any of the Lego titles. They're usually quite good.
Yep.
Because as soon as you die, you're back on screen. It doesn't matter. See, obviously, Tamodachi Life would be quite funny. But
have you played that one? I don't think any of us got that.
No,
did we?
I haven't played it yet, no. Which is, well, yeah. But, see, I'm not. That's not really a game for me, so.
I think I'd like it. I just haven't gotten it yet.
I didn't enjoy Animal Crossing that much, but, you know. Not trying to, you know, put her off the game, but it's a good. Yeah, so that would be my suggestion. A Lego game of some sort.
Lego games, yep.
Therapy, yeah, that was a good way to ease somebody in, so.
Also, my little sister a few years ago when I got Kirby's Epic Yarn, she really liked that one. I think it came out in 2011. So she would have been 9 years old? She would have been 9 years old.
Wow.
And she really loved playing Kirby's Epic Yarn on the Wii because it's almost like Lego. You know, like fall off a cliff or whatever, and you don't really die. You just lose a bunch of your beads. Beads are like the currency, and it's the same thing in Lego games, right? You lose
your studs.
What are they called? Studs.
Yeah. That seems like a good choice.
Yeah. Animal Crossing, I'm kind of like you, Colin. I'm not a huge fan of Animal Crossing. I don't see the like addictive quality that everyone says it has.
No.
I mean, I enjoy it very casually. Mm. So to me, that's not addicting. It's just kind of fun. But Animal Crossing, that's another one that my little sister has liked over the years is Animal Crossing because it's just colorful. It's completely harmless. You don't die at all, period. There's no way to die. I guess, I mean, one time I got stung by a scorpion. That was so scary. I saw a scorpion, so I was like, I'm going to catch it. I pulled out my bug net, and it just started chasing me, and I was just running around town screaming.
Wow.
Like, I was screaming. It wasn't my character. It was scary.
Yeah, Animal Crossing's got a lot more scary for me. I'm like, what? Scorpions? I was not aware there were scorpions in the game. Wow.
Scorpions, and if you shake certain trees, bees will come out.
Oh, yes.
It's really hard to catch a bee without getting stung. Cockroaches in your house, so I don't know. If she's scared of bugs, Animal Crossing might be
a horror game.
Exactly.
Survival horror.
Survival horror against those darn scorpions. I never saw a scorpion again after that. I didn't know what would happen when I took out my bug net, but it just, wow. That thing was not giving up. It was scary. Finally, it just got me, and I just fainted, and I think I ended up back in my house. So that's about as close as you get to dying in Animal Crossing. So.
That is so bizarre.
Harrison, surely you know of a couple of game series that are 4-year-old friendly, maybe?
Well, yeah, I mean, outside of Animal Crossing, you have it on there. There's plenty of easy, like, you know, eShop titles out there that could probably somebody enjoy. I mean, it's just, when you look at things as far as recommending a 4-year-old, I mean, it's the games. That's the reason why you see so many people with, like, this shift in the game industry more to mobile, because when you have these parents or people with, like, iPads or the iPhones or these different mobile devices, is they're able to find these casual-friendly games that even their kids could play. But as far as video games, it's that shifted so vastly right now to the point where, I mean, you can't find that many. And, like I said, the Lego titles are great. You know, Animal Crossing's up there as well, but, well, and, well, I don't know, Animal Crossing may seem too little complex as far as you have to read through text and such.
That is true. You'd have to play it with her, for sure. Because a 4-year-old, that's not reading age, is it?
Well, depends on the 4-year-old.
I guess that's true. Well, I guess those are our suggestions. It is, I mean, there are some that are like, games that just aren't that great. that we don't think about. Some of them are licensed. Like, I'm trying to think of a good example. Like, maybe, like, I don't play these games. Like, Horse Vet. And those really kind of cheesy looking
No.
games that we gamers just don't play. Those might be a good option, but I'm not sure.
No, I don't know.
Has anybody ever played Cooking Mama? I think there's a recent
I
Cooking Mama game. Is that
have.
a 4-year-old friendly type of game?
You know what? If they want to learn to cook or whatever before their Easy Bake Oven, be my guest.
Okay, so obviously we're not super qualified to answer that question. I go mostly off my sister. She doesn't like a whole lot of games, but the ones I have gotten her to like are Animal Crossing and Kirby's Epic Yarn. So those would be my two main recommendations for sure. That finishes our listener slash reader slash non-gamer people who don't even listen or read the site questions. We'll move on now to our kind of the second section of our super guide feature here. I just called it other things that we can talk about here. Okay, so something that nobody asked, but nobody thinks to ask is what is Nintendo's age and how did the company get into video games in the first place? We mentioned it before, but Nintendo is over 125 years old. So that's Nintendo's age. I think they turned what? 125 on September
Yes,
23rd?
you're
that's right. Yeah,
correct.
that's right.
Yeah. That is my brother's birthday. Huh.
Ooh,
Wow.
interesting.
Now I'll never forget it. Nintendo's birthday and my brother's birthday are the same. So that's nifty. So Nintendo started in 1889, believe it or not. They were just a simple card-making company at the time.
Which name was started out as Nintendo Kōpai.
That's right.
They made Hanafuda cards. What's the translation for that? Just like flower cards. They actually sold handmade Hanafuda cards. And at first they didn't do very well with that because they were so expensive, so they kind of made them a little cheaper.
They did, yeah, and
Like in quality and money,
well, they
obviously.
got a little
So.
bigger, whatever, because they ended up doing playing cards with Disney characters on there during the 40s and 50s.
Yep, that was a big turning point for Nintendo. They got really big then. What was this around the same time that Hiroshi Yamauchi became president
He became
as well?
president around the, I want to say, the 1940s.
Yeah, I think that's
Okay.
correct. It's
That would make
around
sense.
that time.
Because Satoru Iwata, who's the current, CEO president of the company right at this moment, he's the first one that was not related to the Yamauchi family line to have taken over to the company.
No.
Yep. So Nintendo went like probably over 100 years as a family-owned company. The Yamauchis. So
Yep.
Hiroshi Yamauchi, though, is the president who took Nintendo to heights that were just obviously as great as they are that everyone sees today. So
And
yeah,
to
he's
start, I mean,
important.
the company did a lot of things, well, as far as when they got into video games, they kind of decided to become a toy company. But even before that, they did delve into a little more stranger entrepreneurship, such as,
Yep.
Love Hotels.
Love it,
That's
yes.
a long story.
Instant rice.
Instant
That's
Rice, that
right.
So they tried to get into the food business with instant rice.
they did that. But they did, before they, started the Nintendo
The
Entertainment.
video game
Yeah,
thing.
the video game thing. They well, NES to be exact, is they did have a few failed ventures. There was Radar Scope, which I believe was technically kind of a Space Invaders ripoff, and
It was,
those.
yes.
Yeah, that was an arcade game,
Yeah, and
Radar Scope.
then here's a story that led to the creation. Well, aside from Donkey Kong taking its place, was the game sold poorly here in the States. I think it was the States that sold really poorly, and Nintendo was starting to scramble to find out a way to use the what to do with the unsold, arcade cabinets, and
Well, that's right, because they had thousands left, and no one
yeah,
wanted them, so they're like, we need.
yeah, and what they did was they used that to create Donkey Kong.
Yep, that's where Shigeru Miyamoto comes in. But
That's right.
actually, before this, I was reading this on Wikipedia today. I just love Wikipedia. Woohoo! But okay, you need to help me pronounce his name. But
Gunpei.
Gunpei Yokoi.
Yeah,
Gunpei
Yokoi.
Yokoi. Yeah.
Yokoi. Okay, he was. This was before Radar Scope, before Donkey Kong, before arcades.
Yep.
He was just like a worker in the assembly line or something like that at Nintendo, and Hiroshi Yamauchi found out that he was actually a pretty good engineer, and he started making, like, electronic toys for Nintendo, and that is basically what got Nintendo into the video game business.
That's right.
What made them big in the video game business is kind of this story that we have now with the radar scope cabinets that were unsold, and Harrison, I'll let you continue from there.
Oh, from that, yeah, but Gunpei Yokoi, as everybody knows, well, he went on to do, like, before he died in 1997, I believe, from a car accident, but he's the man responsible for the creation of the Game Boy, one of the other halves of creating the game series Metroid, but also one of the bigger first things, I think, in between the NES and, you know, Radar Scope, or I think it was around the same time, was he created the Game & Watch LCD, like, you know, LCD, like, little portables. Like,
yeah.
To put that in perspective, you remember those Tiger Electronic games that were popular during the 90s, and just were unplayable? That's what Game & Watch series were. They were these little tiny things, like LCD, like game portables that had certain games that came up. That's what got first popular for Nintendo as far as video games.
Yeah, those were the precursor to the Game Boy. So the Game Boy wasn't actually Nintendo's first handheld console. It was these little Game & Watch units that would come with, like, one or two games built in, along with a watch and or an alarm.
Yeah, most of them were what known as a dedicated system, which means it played one game. And then later on, they developed it so you can play two games. And then, see, Gunpei Yokoi's main, the way he worked was, he liked the idea of using older technology. And at that time, it was, these LCD screens were considered old technology. But to do interesting things with them, because they were cheap. And so, that's why the Game Boy is, I mean, it's a rugged machine. It can withstand anything, because, I mean, rather famously, there's one that got, was it the Gulf War? It got involved in a bombing attack, and it still works to this day. So, you know, it's that was like the way he did things were like, okay, so this technology is old, but we're going to think of something interesting to do with it, and then we can mass produce this quickly and easily. And that's what the Game Watches were. And then they took that.
And make it kid friendly.
And that's right, exactly, yeah. That was the main thing. And, yeah.
Nintendo, it's funny, Nintendo systems are really rugged to this day, and that's where the roots...
That's right.
That's where the roots go for that. It's part of Nintendo's family-friendly image as well. Nintendo kind of has these roots in the toy industry, which actually leads into how the NES was able to sell in the United States. So in 1983, there was the big video game crash. That was caused by just an oversaturation of really shoddy products, poor advertising. The, you know, consumers and retailers just did not have faith in the industry anymore, the home console video game industry. So Nintendo released the NES, which obviously was a massive success. Almost everyone knows what an original Nintendo is, the NES. How did they... I mean, the video game crash of 1983 left the industry in shambles, so how did Nintendo get the NES as successful as it was against those odds?
Well, this is what happened, because this came out, obviously, in Japan 1983.
Yep, as the Famicom.
As the Famicom. And what is it when the Atari or ColecoVision or any of those, various home consoles during the time, what were they marketed as?
Home computers.
Not just home computers, but also video game machines as well. Toys. And once the crash happened, it was assumed that those things were just a fad, they're going to fade away and move on to the next, you know, big thing. The thing that the U.S., which Nintendo had a bit of trouble getting to it, they had a bit of a launch in New York to test this out, to test this console out, but you have to thank the name itself for, you know, getting away from the fact that, like, it was in that title video game. They called it the Nintendo Entertainment System.
That's right, yeah.
That's how, that name alone, but once that, because in the wild, the States, they didn't want to release it here. They didn't. It wasn't until they told them that this was not necessarily a video game machine, but once it was demoed, so, and history was born, and it became, you know, Nintendo's best-selling console to date. Well, actually...
The Wii may have surpassed it.
The Wii has surpassed it. Yeah, the Wii has surpassed it. But, so goes history. But another thing that you could probably say to it, whatever, is once these games came out, it's just the fact that it broke similar to just usual video game conventions back then. Take, for instance, Super Mario Brothers. what is it, like, you know, the thing when you saw various Atari games, it was just usually, all the action happened on one screen. You never had anything going left down, like, you know, left to right. What Super Mario Brothers did, and, you know, and I will go on to say that Super Mario Brothers, if you're designing video games, it's one of those few tiles that should be used for just basic video game design. Same thing with, like, Legend of Zelda. But even when you first boot up that screen, the first level, World 1-1, it changed everything for that, because you were going, there was an actual end to the game. You know, you were going from left to right.
That's right.
Yeah, Nintendo just had, like, strict policies on the quality of video games. They had to, you know, like, match a certain standard of quality in order to be released on the NES. Nintendo had all sorts of things in place to make sure that everything released on the NES was good, you know, was just good quality stuff.
Yep.
For one thing, they actually put a restriction on third-party developers that they could only make 5 games in a year so that they weren't just, you know, pumping out crappy games one after the other. Everything had to be, like, Nintendo approved. They created the famous Nintendo Seal of Quality.
Which has changed very dramatically over the years. I mean, the thing's on there, but it's...
It just means that it'll play on a Nintendo system.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
It's a shame, really. That's all it means these days. It's just, yeah, it works. Like, okay, great. But,
yeah. Still nice to see it there, though.
Yeah, and of course, when a company was developing a game for the NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System, and they would have to sometimes, you know, they have to demo it to Hiroshi Yamauchi. You know, but he didn't play games. This is the big thing, and you know, he owned a video game company, but he never played a game. He would get.
But he still had it. He just had an instinct.
That's right.
For what was going to sell, you know.
He was a very smart businessman.
And what was good stuff.
He was also a very aggressive businessman as well. I mean, he didn't back down from anyone. Anyway, and,
Yeah.
Yeah, so he would have people play the game for him, and then on the spot he would do it, yes or no. Is it good enough? No. Or, yeah, okay, go ahead. But then, you know.
Yep.
So, and of course, this 5-game limit thing. Some companies managed to get around that. I think the most famous one is Konami, I think, where they created the Ultra brand. They go, oh, it's a whole separate company, but it's actually Konami employees inside this other company making games. So it's like, oh yeah, it's Ultra, it's not us, it's Ultra. And so yeah, like the original Metal Gear and one of the Turtle games, I think, was Ultra as well.
Oh, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. I did wonder why it says Ultra on there.
That's right.
Now I know.
And that was Konami's way of doing the workaround. But Nintendo... Yeah,
there were other ways, companies tried to employ. but Nintendo generally did a really good job at just making sure that, like, the advertising had to be really honest and things like that so that people could have faith in the NES and the games on it.
Basically, Nintendo set the standard. They reset the standard, and they're like, there you go. No, this is what video games are. And you had to work to what those standards are. Otherwise, you have a second crash. So.
Yep. So, now you kind of know all those things combined. You know, just really good games that are the standards for video game design today, plus all those other things we talked about made Nintendo into the just giant, massive, massive behemoth of a company that it is today that everyone knows. And so, just as some more Nintendo basic Nintendo facts and information. So Nintendo's main home console generations. So we started with the NES, right?
Yep.
Most people know it as simply just Nintendo, like the original Nintendo.
Yep.
So followed that by the Super Nintendo, followed by the N64, the GameCube came after that, then the Wii, then the Wii U. This actually kind of brings up, I mean, of all those systems that I just named, our listeners probably are familiar with at least one or two of them from their childhood, but it's a little later on that things get confusing because people don't really play Nintendo like they used to. And so I just want to clarify to everybody right now, I'm trying to do Nintendo a bit of a favor here. There is a difference between the Wii and the Wii U, a big difference. They are two different systems.
That's right, yeah.
Just so you all know. Nintendo has made some mistakes there.
The naming is so ridiculous, but hey, that's what they decided to call it. So.
And it is it's a great system, regardless of how silly the name is. So
it certainly is.
Everyone who has a Wii, the Wii U is actually backwards compatible, meaning it can play Wii games. So if you have a Wii and you have all the, you know, games and controllers for your Wii, if you get a Wii U, you can actually transfer everything over, and you can do everything you could on your Wii U, if that made any sense whatsoever. So that's just clearing that up. Nintendo's main handheld generations, it started with the Game Boy. That was followed by the Game Boy Color. That was followed by the Game Boy Advance. So, I don't know. And within all of those, there were kind of different... There were a couple of different Game Boys, yeah, right? There was like the Game Boy Pocket. Yeah, that was a Game Boy. It was just smaller.
They did the various iterations and things, yeah.
I just remember how they brought up a big campaign. It was like for, I think, for the brick-sized Game Boy, the first big...
The original Game Boy.
Yeah, the original one.
Tetris,
you know, puke green and black style of gameplay, back screen, when it came in different colors. Not the screen, but the system, the handheld itself, when I remember the ad campaign for that, and I think that just boosted sales even more, just because, yeah. Oh, wow, I can have this yellow Game Boy, or this transparent one, or this blue one, this red one, this black one, you know?
Everyone loves color options. I don't know why Nintendo doesn't do that a lot more strongly than they currently are, but yeah.
They do with 3DS, it's just they don't.
Kinda. Yeah. There's not like a rainbow of colors, though. I mean, think about like iPods. You go to the, you know, Apple Store and check out their iPod page, and it shows like tons of different colors of iPod Nanos or iPod Shuffles.
That's true. Do you remember the very first E3 where the Wii was shown? They showed it in like... It's 8 different colors. It's like
green and red.
And yeah, always
they, did, they did the same thing with the GameCube as well.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, well, I mean, to be fair, the GameCube had the Spice Orange. I mean.
Oh, I do remember the Spice Orange one. I was looking everywhere for that one.
I have one, so I'm happy about that. I'm very happy about that. But, yeah. So the GameCube had 3 colors to choose from, but, yeah. They seem to have less and less color options as they go down the line. The Wii U has 2.
Yep, black and white.
That's right.
So, it's just, I mean, they've got literally black and white in color, but they're, I don't know, the differentiation between Wii and Wii U for most people isn't black and white, so there's the irony right there.
Yeah, very good.
So after all the Game Boys, I mean, there were 3 main generation of Game Boys, the original Game Boy, the Game Boy Color, and then the Game Boy Advance, and each within that separate generation had like different how would you describe that? Subsystems? The Game Boy Advance. Okay, there was the original Game Boy Advance. Yep. There was the Game Boy Advance SP, which had the clamshell shape that, you know, closed, and then there was the Game Boy Micro. Those are all Game Boy Advances.
That's right, yeah. It all had the same system architecture and size. It was just the form factor was different. It was, yeah, the clamshell, which is now obviously synonymous with Nintendo handhelds because they've done it ever since.
Yep. Till the 2DS, that
till
is.
Till the 2DS, yeah. The horrible slate. No, that's not a lot. That's terrible. the Game Boy Advance was... It was kind of a... I've lost my train of thought. No, it's gone.
The one that introduced, like, new models?
I'm
trying to think.
It's gone. It's gone. It's all gone. Move on.
It is obliterated. It's lost in space. So following the Game Boy Advance, we had the revolution that was the Nintendo DS.
Yeah.
DS standing for dual screen, right? That's always what I just assumed.
Well, see, this is where the DS thing gets confusing, because it has, like, multiple meanings, because some people say, oh, it's developer system. Or, yeah, dual screen.
What?
Yeah, oh yeah, that was like the early, like, oh yeah, the Nintendo DS, developer system. And it's like...
Developer system?
Yeah, I don't know.
Who would come, who came up with that? It's got 2 screens, it obviously stands for dual screen.
See, that would be the obvious thing, but I don't know. God, I'm on fire tonight, I tell you. No.
Lost it again.
Yeah, lost it again.
Maybe it had something to do with the touch screen. The Nintendo DS was a big phenomenon. I mean, it was massive in Japan, when it was released worldwide, it was just huge.
That's right, because the Nintendo DS was a huge departure, because they dropped the Game Boy tag. And people were like, well, why, you know, it's been known as your handhelds on the Game Boy, and, well, we're moving on. And the Nintendo DS, I think, was the last thing that Hiroshi Yamauchi had a hand in. It was the last thing, like, okay, that's it. and then he stepped away from the company. So the DS was his last, and I mean, his last fanfare, and it really was, because it was a huge success.
Took a while to get some steam, but yeah, it was.
Oh yeah. I think all Nintendo systems take a while. They're all slow burners, but, well, the Wii was obviously the opposite of that, but...
You know, it was a miracle. We got our Wii. I mean, I was back in high school at the time. We got our Wii the Christmas that it came out, which was a big miracle. We live in a small town, small area, not a whole lot of people here. My mom managed to find a Wii at Alco, this little Alco in a town 20 miles away. And I don't know, Colin, you probably don't have like Alcos. It's just little department store.
Yeah, it's just, okay.
Yeah. Harrison, do you know what an Alco is, though?
I've heard of them. Are they... Is it like a...
They're just like really, really crappy Walmart type thing. They're just not that great. But that's where we got our Wii. My mom just managed to find one there. There were like three Wiis there. According to the sales dude, he's like, well, we have two that are reserved for people, but we've got one available for you. So,
wow.
That was a miracle. The Wii, that's another part of Nintendo's history. When the Wii came out, man, that thing was hard to find for the first couple of months.
Well, yeah, because it was a... You know, all those older people, well, parents and everything were buying this up, and I mean, and this is the sucky truth, is that it did, that thing kind of collected dust for the longest time.
Yeah.
For many, it just, it's, you had to realize, if you take that casual market out there, you, as far as the casual market, you picked that up and actually didn't play it that much, aside from Wii Sports and the occasional Wii Play and shovelware titles that come out, whatever, that people just bought because of the name on the box was, well, you probably see those sales are... You could probably cut that in half, maybe even by 2-3/4.
That's right.
Yeah, if you consider all those people who stopped playing it after a couple of weeks.
See, it's an interesting, I mean, interesting fact from my perspective is, where I lived with my parents, we never owned a Wii. Never. I played a one, but I never owned one. And but my brother, my oldest brother, has owned seven.
Whoa.
Seven Wiis. That is baffling.
Does he have a Wii Mini? I'd love to see one of those.
He does have a Wii Mini. That's because he continuously cycles through consoles. And yeah, last one he got was a Wii Mini, and it's a bizarre little device. But I was actually quite shocked they managed to take the already small Wii and somewhat shrink it, which they haven't shrunk it by much, but yeah, it's a bit smaller. And bizarre machine, very bizarre.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Oh, wow, seven. And you never actually owned
seven?
A Wii.
No. Yeah?
Yeah, didn't you hear that?
No, I heard that. No, I'm quoting. I forgot. I think it was like this was Julie Andrews' movie. She's like, seven? Yes, but seven?
Which movie is this?
I remember seeing a clip, whatever, of Nostalgia Critic, and he was like talking about the Super Mario Brothers Super Show or something like that about how... Or no, he was talking about Captain N, the Game Master, and he was talking about how there was certain background... There was like the backgrounds of certain shots in the animation... where it was just missing the background. And he just said, like, oh, this wasn't just, like, a once or twice occurrence, he was saying. It was like, I counted seven times this happened, and then he intercutted, like, that from that movie. I gotta find it. I know what it is, and I've seen it before, but the clip goes on, he's like, seven! And then goes back to the Nostalgia Critic. He's like, yes, seven. He's like, yes, but seven!
Yeah. And to add on to that, he's also owned two Wii Us. You know, the sister's only been out 2 years. And he doesn't have.
Did he buy the special edition Zelda one that came out last year?
He hasn't got it anymore. But he's planning on buying a third. Don't ask. He works in mysterious ways. There you go.
Well, after the Wii, we're still kind of talking about handheld. finishing up on the handheld thing. We had just been talking about the Nintendo DS as a generation of handhelds, and now the Nintendo 3DS, another really bad naming thing. I feel like the 3DS began the whole, like, just bad naming. See, Nintendo.
I think
it just confuses.
It comes down to brand name, but it's. It also comes out to marketing as well, just to differentiate everything. They just think, like, oh, well, everybody should know this is new. No, I mean, to the casual viewer, they're going to have some confusion.
Yeah, like, what does 3DS even mean? I mean, when you went from the Game Boy to the Game Boy Color, that made it pretty dang obvious.
That was,
it's a Game Boy with color. Now it's like 3DS, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
The reason, obviously, that it's called the 3DS is because it can display images in stereoscopic 3D without the use of glasses, which is really nice. But then Nintendo comes out with the 2DS, which is a 3DS that can't play games in stereoscopic 3D. So there you go. I'm just trying my utmost best to confuse everyone.
But, wait, there's more.
Oh, the new 3DS.
No, new name, just say the new 3DS.
That's right, which is an absolute terrible name. Absolutely terrible. They need a better marketing department, because anything. Ultra 3DS, anything, you know. I don't know. It's awful. But the interesting fact about the 3DS, again, this is one of my little stories. I've got two older brothers, and the middle one, does it have three dual screens? I was like, no, it has a dual screen system. It's just like a DS. Went, oh, so why is it called the 3DS? I was like, because it does 3D. He goes, oh, I see. Oh, when you explain it, it makes sense. I was like, you seriously thought this system would have three sets of dual screens? I mean, just the size.
Adding up to six screens total.
The size of it would be immense, you know? But, yeah.
They could all be tiny little, like, Game Boy Micro size screen. I don't know if you guys have seen a Game Boy Micro, yeah. But that thing's got a tiny little screen.
Oh, I've seen it before. It's just an only thing you'll really want to have it is just for it's a nice collector's item.
Yeah, it's not worth playing anything on, unfortunately.
So, there you have it. All the generations of Nintendo systems and then some. Actually, then some would be these next ones. Some Nintendo Black Sheeps for you. Sheeps, is that a word? We have the Game & Watches. The Game & Watches, which we've already kind of talked about. The first, like, handheld systems from Nintendo that each had a game built into it. And then we have, I believe this was between the Game Boy and the Game Boy Color, we had the Virtual Boy.
Yeah.
Any discussion about Nintendo as a whole has to include the dark spots of Nintendo's history.
Which was the one project made by Game Boy creator Gunpei Yokoi, which he was so embarrassed by its failure that he had to force to resign the company.
Yeah.
Oh, is that how the story goes?
Yeah,
oh,
he was that embarrassed. He felt like the responsibility was on his hand.
That's right.
And he just left it. He just left the company in shame. That was it.
Yeah. The way Japanese culture and the way they do business is vastly different from they have like an honor system, and of course he felt he shamed the company, and so he left, to start work on another handheld, which is obviously not Nintendo. It was made by Namco, I think, called the Wonder Swan. But yeah, that's not really worth mentioning. But yeah. So unfortunately, this was the product that meant that. Yeah, the person who basically developed and designed the handheld systems for Nintendo, no longer there. So that was it.
Yep, he was one. Yeah, he's one of the biggest names that comes up when you talk about Nintendo history. And he left the company, and apparently it was due to the Virtual Boy. So for those of our listeners who don't know, the Virtual Boy was supposed to be like a handheld gaming system, Nintendo's next handheld gaming system. It's like this massive, massive thing. You could actually set it on a stand on a table and look into it. Massive, massive thing, like I said.
It was like a large pair of goggles almost. It was like a large pair of goggles almost.
Yeah, exactly. And it was supposed to immerse you in these amazing, like, true 3D graphics. Mm. But it just managed to give people headaches and so on and so forth. It just, it was a biggest failure in Nintendo's history, or at least one of them. As far as Nintendo's video game history is concerned, the Virtual Boy is the biggest failure.
And only 15 games were ever released here.
Yeah. So who has plays a Virtual Boy?
I have not.
I have owned one. Got it for Christmas.
Oh, dear.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I remember asking for that for Christmas, and I played it extensively. Mario Clash was fun. Oh. Mario Tennis okay. Mario Land for the Virtual Boy in there was actually, really fun to play. Just the fact, like, you really didn't need to put this in Virtual Boy.
That's right.
It did not make sense. I mean, it was marketed as this virtual reality, console, which they marketed as a handheld, which it wasn't.
No. It's the furthest thing from a handheld.
That thing was probably about as, like, to say that thing is about as portable as, my dresser drawer. That's how portable it is. And
yeah, it was meant to be portable, but it's like I say, the best way to play it probably was with the little like tri. What do they call those things? Tripod.
Yeah, tripod.
Yeah. Yeah, there was just like this little stand that you put the goggles on, and the best way to play it was on a table,
yeah,
on a desk or something. So it wasn't very portable.
No, it was just poorly constructed. It was just poorly constructed, poorly designed, and none of the games really took advantage of it. And not to say that there was anything to take advantage. There was anything to take advantage of. I mean, it felt like if it had another year or two in the book, like, you know, to
yeah.
be cooked or something or designed, I could have seen something a little bit more respectable. But this was something that was on. They wanted out before the N64 came out, and
yeah, that's the one thing we can take away from the Virtual Boy was its controller. They took the controller after the Virtual Boy failed. They took the controller and they basically shoved a middle prong into it, and there's your N64 control. You know, that's the basis they used.
Yeah, I remember hearing something about that. But yeah, but
it does seem likely. I mean, it had really long handles,
yeah.
The Virtual Boy controller. So
yeah.
I guess that was the precursor to the N64 controller that most people are probably really familiar with as well.
And long story short, this thing bombed bad.
Really?
Yeah,
bad.
Nintendo discontinued it after like a year, less than a year.
It was,
I
believe they started to discontinue it. It was released in the States in August of 95, and they discontinued it in March, I believe, of next year. Because and here's the thing. I believe it dropped its price three separate times from August 95 to Christmas of that same year.
That's remarkable. Really remarkable.
So I almost think it's a good thing that most people, when they think of Nintendo and what they know about Nintendo, they don't know about this.
Yeah.
So it's almost a good thing. Nintendo's the darkest. What is that? I don't know if you guys have seen Avatar The Last Airbender, the cartoon show, but the darkest day in Fire Nation history, the darkest day in Nintendo history, Virtual Boy.
Is that darkest hour?
I don't know. I could think of some.
Darkest few months.
I mean, there's this little meme that shows up. Well, it's a little chalkboard. It says, like, you know, Nintendo died when, and it just shows these little things that throughout history, and but they're crossed out.
That's
like,
right.
Through the chalk line. And it's just like, oh, when they didn't do HD, or when their online didn't work, crossed out. Like, all these things throughout history that critics and even non-like fans of the company, you know, they thought this, like, oh, this company's finished. Nothing. Thing is, on this show, we're not, like, always hunky-dory about Nintendo. We're very critical of them. You know, that's what the segment site is. It's intelligent passion for all things Nintendo. It's just, I will say, this is a company that is really hard to kill.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, they're just, I mean, they'll never stop being good at just making fun games, if you ask me, and that's why I stick with them. That's why I stay loyal to Nintendo. I always know that no matter what happens, they'll just always be making great games. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
And another thing with that is that when you say Nintendo's hard, if not impossible, to kill, they've just got the money. They're the most valuable. In fact, we should just move on to this. Nintendo's place in the industry. I have this as a bullet point here. We already talked about how Nintendo was responsible for reviving the home console industry after the video game crash of 1983. So let's move on to this next thing under that. Nintendo is the most valuable company in the industry. So no matter how badly they're doing right now, I don't know that they'll ever... It'll take a lot to take them... to dethrone them from the position that they're at as the most valuable
let us be clear.
Company in the gaming industry.
Let us be clear. There is a difference between value as far as a company and when it comes to market share. You know, as of right now, Nintendo does not own the market share. I mean, they don't own the market share like they did last generation with the Wii, but as far as value, that's a completely different thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, as far as, you know, their war chest is just massive. They've got plenty of money there in the...
Yeah, well,
in their vaults.
That's it. So. They've had a whole string of successes. And, you know, the Virtual Boy, obviously, that didn't go down so well. But, apart from that, it was, you know, success. And then it's been going that way. I mean, I don't think they've ever lost money on a handheld system, if you discount the Virtual Boy. I think they've always made profit, without fail. I think that's correct. That's got to be correct. And this, it almost the same story for their consoles. Apart from, did the GameCube, was the GameCube successful then?
It was, as out of their home consoles right now, it is their least successful. Mm. I mean, it came in third in worldwide sales behind, you know, because Sony's PlayStation 2 was just a behemoth during that generation.
That was a juggernaut,
Yeah, it just had, it didn't matter, like, it out of the gate, it just stormed. But it wasn't until, like, the late end of it was the Xbox was second, then the GameCube was third. But for the longest time, GameCube and the Xbox like, alternate between 2 and 3. It wasn't until the tail end when GameCube games started to become scarce and sales just flew off while Nintendo was concentrating on the Wii.
Yeah. That's one thing we should say about Nintendo. I think ever since the N64 days, there occasionally is a software drought where there's a long period where nothing gets released. I think that started in N64, especially towards the end of it. There was... I mean, like, patches of months where it's just bare. And it's just, you know, that's the way it's pretty much been, I think. Even the Wii, towards the end, it was just, there was nothing, you know, so...
Except Pandora's Tower.
Oh, yeah, the Operation Rainfall.
Which is sad, because, yeah, out of all the Operation Rainfall games, Pandora's Tower was arguably the least in terms of popularity, sales...
Yeah, that's right.
Critical acclaim... Yeah.
Well, mainly because the other two had such a history. I mean, the last story was made by Hironobu Sakaguchi, who developed the Final Fantasy series, and Xenoblade Chronicles. That was coming back off the Xeno series, which was huge on like Sony platforms. And, you know, you had Xenoblade Gears and then Xeno Saga on PS1 and PS2 respectively, and so that had a cult following anyway. So, you know, I mean. Pandora's Tower was a brand new IP, and I'm not really that surprised it got sort of forgotten about, and it was the most forgotten battle of the three titles.
Just to avoid going too far off the path here, I think that we will actually close out with that, our super guide feature for today. I put on the notes here that in case we have time, we'll talk a little bit about what we've been playing, and I put on the list here Super Smash Brothers for 3DS, I'm guessing. I put that on the notes and everything. So everyone's been playing Super Smash Bros., I gather.
Yeah, but that should be the point.
Yep.
That's a series that most people should know about, I feel like. A lot of people probably, you know, played it on the N64 and or the GameCube. Mm. Probably on the Wii, even though Brawl isn't my favorite Super Smash Bros. I went back to Melee after playing Brawl for so many years, and I thought Melee is so superior in terms of
gameplay. Oh, yeah, it's fast.
Gameplay.
It's just so much faster.
Yeah, yeah. But the newest Smash Bros. Just came out, and the first handheld entry in the series, and that would be Super Smash Bros. For 3DS. So that's what we've all been playing.
Yep.
And it's really good. The only thing, okay, this may seem strange, but the only thing that I don't really like about it is the voice acting. It just it sounds off. Especially Palutena. I was really excited to use her, and I don't think it's the same voice actress voicing her in Super Smash Bros. As it was in Kid Icarus Uprising.
Was it the same in the trailer when she was revealed?
I don't know. I tried to look that up. I don't think it was. So it was, you know, this new voice actress for Palutena is pretty close, but not close enough for me. She just sounds a little odd. So does Lucina and Shulk, and I'm trying to think of some other examples, but I can't. Mostly those three who, you know, had a lot of voice acting in their respective games, and now they just sound a little bit strange in Super Smash Bros.
Well, I mean... It's a handheld, I guess, but I know that sounds like a really poor excuse, so... I did notice Samus's voice a little off for Zero Suit Samus, but then again, I think it was, like, the same voice quips from Raw, I believe.
Yeah, I think it is.
And I know Fox's voice is a little different.
Yeah, they all just sound odd, which has been bugging me more than it should. Also, another thing is that I set the outlines to as thick as possible, and I feel like it's still not thick enough. I feel like sometimes when the game is zoomed out quite a bit, it's still really hard to see the action, even with your outlines.
Yeah, especially
as thick as possible.
Especially there's stuff happening all over the place. It's like, where am I? And like, oh, there I am. Yeah, great.
So, how does everybody enjoy it controlling on a handheld?
I get hand cramps a lot quicker.
See, I would.
If I'm like lounging around in bed and I'm not in a good, I don't have good posture. I tend to get hand cramps, but.
Hmm.
Well,
other than that, I do pretty well.
Well, you know, and as far as design on there, I mean, and I'm going to say some few... I feel like it controls well, and thankfully with any Smash Bros. Title, you know, controls are customizable. I had a roommate who was upset. He was saying, like, he said, this better have, you know, D-pad support on here or whatever, because that's what he used to play. And I'm not kidding you, he played Melee on the D-pad. On the GameCube controller. And I say,
that is like the worst D-pad in history, yeah. Let alone the fact that it's a D-pad.
I was like, are you joking me? He's like, no, I enjoyed my position control. I'm like, an analog stick is precision control.
Yeah.
But I
would happily take an analog stick, though, over the slide pad any day.
Yeah, it's a little different. I don't know. I'm just afraid I'm going to break it. That's it. Yeah. All those reports. But,
at the moment, my slide pad feels very loose. So I'm a tad concerned, but we'll see how it goes.
Well, I'm checking on mine right now.
And the new 3DS is coming, after all.
Yeah, not to next year, though. That's a long way away.
Eventually.
Yeah. I'm just note, Nintendo, I really hope you're able to reimburse my 3DS if my circle pad, my slide pad comes off. But, no, I thing is, I got mine at midnight on October 3rd. Only had a few, about maybe 3 hours playing it, 3-4 hours, just between work and doing the podcast and just running around town. But I've unlocked maybe 4 characters so far, one of which I was surprised I unlocked this early, and I'm sorry, but if you guys don't want to hear this right now, anybody listening to this doesn't want to hear, even though we discussed it in previous podcasts about the leaks, I did unlock Duck Hunt Dog. Which, by the way...
Do you know how? I want to unlock Duck Hunt Dog.
I just played through Classic Mode a few times with different characters, and then that's all I did. But I did that, and... Oh, and by the way, it's not called Duck Hunt Dog in there. It's just, his name in there is just Duck Hunt.
Duck Hunt Duo.
That's it.
Is it Duck Hunt Duo? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's different over here, because ours is Duck Hunt Duo. Because I played Lewis earlier on, and he used Duck Hunt, and it came out as Duck Hunt Duo.
I haven't played it as it at all, but I will say, I haven't played the characters that put one thing on Duck Hunt Dog was, have you seen its final smash?
No.
Oh, I avoided the spoilers for everything on there. Check that out. It is, if you thought the Mega Man Final Smash just made you just go, like, almost faint, this one will just tickle your fancy.
I gotta do that soon.
And
you're just making the suspense a little too much for me right
now.
Oh,
no, it's great. No, but characters I can play, my go-to character is Samus, but I messed around with, I played with Mega Man a lot in the demo, so I was a little more comfortable with that. But my first character I joined, a bunch of my roommates went to Midnight, got it, played local play. I play Shulk. I'm still getting used to it because I know you can change through his different moveset, like it's shown in the trailer. I just thought that was just there for show, but I didn't realize there's a special move where you could change, be it from speed, smash, agile, like all these different, you know, skill types. So, or movesets. So that's taken a little while to get used to. Zero Suit Samus, though, I think is getting more of my attention a little bit, because there's some things I feel like are a little overpowered with her, but she just moves a little bit faster when it comes to Samus. And I have not tried out Smash Run yet, even though from various reviews, it's not necessarily bad from what I'm hearing, it's just it feels a tad shallow for, like, a main feature, I think.
I kind of miss Subspace Emissary, a story mode of some kind. I miss that.
Speaking of which, was anybody disappointed? I mean, I was kind of expecting... I mean, this is a small, small little nitpicky complaint, is that when booting up the game, there's
no
movie intro. There isn't.
No,
it just goes...
There's no opening cinematic. I was so... Because that's been a staple in all the Smash games, and this is the first one without it. I was like, oh.
Well, maybe that might be different for the Wii U version, because I really... Yeah. Because, one, we don't know what the exclusive mode is, and two... We've already found out why certain characters were cut from this version, like Ice Climbers, and why the characters were separated, is because Sakurai mentioned that the limitations, I think, of the 3DS, or maybe just the core gameplay and design of, well, actually, I'm just going to say a 3DS, because I think that's what Sakurai was specifically stating, was the reason they split up Sheik and Zero Suit Samus as their own separate characters was to have them all as one character, like with Samus, and then Sheik with Zelda, changing back and forth, I think the CPU or something like that, the 3DS could not take it. It's the same thing with Ice Climbers, it's just controlling two characters. And
well, how on earth does Rosalina and Luma work,
well,
then?
Well, look at Luma. It's a fairly small... I mean, you can almost... It's a fairly smaller character, too, but it's not as much as a carbon copy like when you have the Ice Climbers, which are same size and just different color palette. It's a... You could almost deal the same thing as it uses Luma as almost as, like, a weapon.
I still don't buy it. But that's just me.
Well, this is just the reason he stated why you can't use a Circle Pad Pro as a second stick, because the 3DS CPU is already maxed out, and the Circle Pad Pro uses 5% power to fire up the IR sensor. So, but then the new 3DS has the second nub support, because obviously it's a more powerful system.
But this also gives me hope for basically, who knows if the Wii U version is going to have different more characters.
It might do. I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest.
Yeah, at least through DLC.
DLC, yeah. That's the obvious solution to where it wants. I'm quite sure that a number of people will migrate from the 3DS version to the Wii U version. Whereas my previous train of thought was, my thinking was like, oh, maybe once people played the Smash for 3DS, they won't bother with Smash for Wii U. But now I'm thinking they will, because Smash on 3DS is great. Yeah, you know, I have no problems with it. It does feel sort of limited in places.
It does, admittedly. Yeah. I've been enjoying it, but it's... I actually hadn't thought of that opening video thing until you guys mentioned it. That is a real shame. Why didn't I think of that? You know, I did feel, when I first played the game, I did feel this kind of, like, empty feeling inside of me of, like, something is off here, but I couldn't put my finger on it for some reason. Now I can. Now I know. Mm. Oh, well. It's funny because we are getting pretty technical in our discussion now, so I think that if we have any listeners right now who aren't Nintendo fans, we've probably lost them, but that's all right. For those of you listeners who have stuck with us through this entire thing, thank you so much for learning a new thing or two about Nintendo. Even I learned a new thing or two about Nintendo. Thanks, Colin.
That's right.
And Harrison, I think you both had a thing or two to say that I didn't know yet.
Well, yeah,
so that was good.
But, you know, we didn't have much time to discuss more about the history, but also we didn't have much time to discuss about Smash Brothers a little bit, but, you know, that's more until Colin gets, or not, till Lewis gets back to discuss more.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and I kind of have this policy now where if we talk about games we've been playing, we've got to have played them in depth.
Mm.
Speaking of which, just a quick note before we end, I beat Professor Layton versus Phoenix Wright.
Ooh.
The finale was pretty dang good. I'll just say that.
Okay.
A couple episodes ago, I was talking about the story and how I thought it was a little boring. So, just so you know, it does get better. I feel like it builds from the beginning. It's like super boring at the beginning, and then it builds and builds and builds, and the finale actually turns out pretty dang good. Even if the final trial leading up to it is a little bit... It drags on and on, but that's kind of... It's a Phoenix Wright thing, and so I don't know. But yeah, it is a good game. A good finale, story-wise. So, but with that, I think we will end the show here. Before we sign off, I'd like us all to go through and give out our Twitter handles and our Nintendo Network IDs. So I'll just start really quick here. My Twitter handle is my name, Holly Felmeth, so at HollyFelmeth. That's my Twitter handle. My Nintendo Network ID, in case you want to friend request me for your or on your Wii U, is Aeroweth. It's spelled Aerowet. So, Harrison.
Oh, my Twitter handle is HMilfeld, all one word. HMILFELD as a dog. And my Nintendo Network ID is Hybrid Meta. It's all one word, no underscore. HYBRIDMETA.
My Twitter handle is Hylian Bard, or Hylian, depending on how you pronounce it. The reason I chose that was because some person took my name, which I'm not particularly
happy with. You should sue that person.
Well, yeah, I'm guessing it's fairly common. But anyway, my Nintendo Network ID is Cole1990. COL1990. There you go.
Sweet. So, yep, there you go. Now you know how to contact all of us. You can also send us an email with any questions or comments that you have at contact@infendo.com. Here's one thing just to think about and to possibly email me on, because this is a personal request from me. I just got a PlayStation Portable, and I'd like to know what I should get for it. I've got Kingdom Hearts. That's really the only reason I got it, so I don't know what else to play on it. So send us an email, if you will. about what PSP games are good. I'll take that. Obviously, anything Nintendo related is good as well. With that, thank you everyone for listening. This has been Infendo Radio.
See you, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.